Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. State lawmakers were sworn into office last week in Raleigh, but the new session of the General Assembly begins in earnest January 30th, with Republicans holding supermajorities in both the House and Senate, and Republican Pat McCrory in the governor's mansion. Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger told reporters this week he expects a packed agenda this year that will include tax reform, voter ID, education reform, and a host of other issues. Here to talk about the issues facing lawmakers this year is Senator Josh Stein from Raleigh. Senator Stein, thank you very much for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been sworn in. The new General Assembly has taken office, coming back in earnest at the end of January. Then we have a new governor who's taken the oath. Overall, what are your thoughts as we begin this new year in North Carolina with new leadership?
Well, I think I'm as interested to see how it goes as every other North Carolinian. It is a new day in that the Republicans, for the first time in over 100 years, have both the legislative and executive branches. And frankly, I could not be more hopeful or wishful that Governor McCrory is successful, because if he's successful, that means the state is successful. And the one thing that we all have to agree on is that North Carolina has taken it on the chin in this last recession, and we got to get our people back to work.
Well, let's talk about some of the issues that are front and center. The first thing that may come up is actually already passed a revenue law study committee. It's a reform of our unemployment compensation system. There are a lot of folks that believe this particular package to repay the federal debt is too onerous on laid off workers and doesn't do enough for businesses who receive a lot of tax cuts. What do you think?
I haven't had a chance to see the bill, the actual language, because I wasn't on that committee and it hasn't come before me in the legislature. Nor has there been a detailed fiscal analysis that will analyze exactly who bears how much of the whole. But the context is that we have a $2.5 billion shortfall that we owe the federal government. This is money that they lent us because our unemployment payouts were greater than the collections we were getting. Really, two causes for this. One is, for many years, and this was under Democratic legislative control, we didn't do a good enough job to ensure that we had enough money in that pot for when there was the next downturn to be prepared. But the second is North Carolina had a downturn that was worse than almost anyone could imagine. We had the fastest growing unemployment rate in the country. We went from 5.4 to 10.8%. We doubled in a 12-month period. So we just had drastic influx of unemployed people. So we need to have a balanced approach to the shortfall. There needs to be shared sacrifice, both on the part of workers and businesses. If you put it all on business, then it's going to make it hard for those folks to stay in business and to be competitive with their neighboring states. But if you put it all on workers, you're not only causing hardship for those families, but you're hurting the economy, because dollar for dollar, every dollar that goes to an unemployed person who lost their job through no fault of their own gets circulated back in the local economy. It goes to a drugstore, goes to a supermarket, goes to a gas station, goes to a landlord. So we can't put it all on workers. We can't put it all on businesses. And from what I've seen, I'm worried that it's weighted too heavily, putting the cost on workers. But as I said, I haven't seen the detailed analysis yet.
Another issue that a lot of folks are talking about in various forms is a massive overhaul of the state's tax system. It's not the first time this has been proposed, but it's the first time this particular approach maybe has out there. What are your thoughts just in general about tax reform and what you know is coming?
Basically, our tax structure was created to fit an economy that was shaped in the early 20th century. It no longer mirrors what's going on in our economy today. We need to update and modernize our tax code to reflect the 21st century economy. That said, there are a whole host of ways you can do it, and there are a whole host of proposals that I've heard being attributed to different members of the Republican leadership. So until we see exactly what's proposed, it's hard to comment. But there are a couple of guiding principles, I think, that whoever votes on any tax plan that comes forward. One is, will it help position the economy to succeed? Two, will it provide adequate and stable revenues? And three, is it fair? One of the most common proposals we've heard is elimination or substantial reduction of the personal income tax. That's taken $5 to $10 billion of taxes out, and without identifying where we're going to impose those $5 to $10 billion. And any person knows it's a heck of a lot easier to cut $5 to $10 billion in taxes than it is to impose them. And so I would be very worried about what it would do to our state revenues. We've already cut education dramatically over the last 4 years. And any tax reform that isn't revenue neutral is going to be, I think, a major problem. But I'm also concerned when you substitute a sales tax for the personal income tax, that ends up shifting the burden of who pays. It lowers the burden on the top half of earners and raises the burden on the bottom half of earners. And to me, that's just not right, because in the economy over the last decade and a half, those who've done best are at the top as opposed to those at the bottom. And I don't think it's right to put the burden on them.
A couple of issues that Republicans have been talking about a long time. One they passed last session, vetoed by the governor, which is a requirement for a government-issue photo ID at the polls. Governor McCrory said that might be one of the first things he signs. Do we need a photo ID bill?
It is a solution in looking in search of a problem. When you look at historically all the instances of voter fraud, overwhelmingly it happens from absentee ballot voting when you do the mail-in ballot. In-person voter fraud is practically nil. I mean, statistically, it is nil. Of course, it happens maybe once or twice in a decade. But all this voter ID addresses is in-person voting. It doesn't address absentee ballot voting. And when you look at everywhere it's been done, I really question the motivation of the people who are doing it. What it ends up disproportionately affecting are seniors, are low-income, are African-Americans, and disabled. And we should be about making people, making it easier for people to vote. That's why I really support one-stop voting and early voting. That said, we obviously can't tolerate fraud, but there are protections in existing law against in-person fraud. It's a felony. You have to sign your name. You have to identify your address. There are people at the polls who, if they recognize you, they can challenge you. And so, you know, if there are ways to make our voting more secure, I'm not going to oppose it. But if it's a way to prevent legitimate voters from voting, that's absolutely wrong. It's not American, frankly.
Another issue that Representative Stam has promised is revisiting his voucher plan or an education savings account, some way to divert money from public schools to private schools. Are you worried about that?
I'm very worried about that. We've already dramatically cut the amount of money that the state puts into education. We currently pay our teachers. They're 44th in the nation in terms of teacher pay. But when you compare teachers to comparable professions, we are 50th in the nation. So we do not invest enough in our teachers or in our schools as it is today. Vouchers are a way to divert, as you said, public monies into private education. It allows families that otherwise would want to go to private school, it gives them a credit. It helps them to pay, it subsidizes, frankly, their private education. Well, other kids who can't afford to pay that extra bit to go to private school are going to remain in the public schools, and we're going to have a greater segregation economically of our public schools. And that is not in the state's long-term interest. I firmly believe we need to do a better job educating children in public schools. And so I'm open to all manner of reform ideas that will improve public schools. I am adamantly opposed to any effort that will divert monies from public to private education.
One more specific issue that I want to ask you a general question before I let you go. The expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act will be a decision made by the General Assembly and the governor. A lot of folks, the John Locke Foundation and other people with close ties to the Republican leadership, are already saying North Carolina does not need to expand Medicaid and take their federal money to do that. What are your thoughts?
I need to do a lot more study of this issue, but from what I know, I can't see how we would not accept an expansion of Medicaid for two reasons. One is, it would be an incredible economic boon to rural North Carolina. The match for 4 years is 100% paid for by the federal government, 3 or 4 years. And then thereafter, it is paid at a 90-10 match, meaning that 90 cents comes from the federal government, 10 cents from state. So over a 10-year period, it's something like $15 billion of federal money leveraged by less than a billion, about $700 million state dollars. That is money that will go into healthcare. It'll go to hospitals. It'll go to doctors. It'll go to nurses. It'll go to physical therapists. It'll go to dentists. It is essential for that part, but also that's money that's going to help people get basic healthcare. There was just a story in the paper yesterday about children in North Carolina not having basic dental protection, dental care, and there is a great human benefit to having healthcare.
And finally, before I let you go, what are your thoughts about Governor McCrory's plans this session? Do you expect him to be in line with Senator Berger and Speaker Tillis on some of these issues that we talked about? or do you hope he takes another tact?
Well, I certainly hope he stands independent. The executive is independent of the legislature, and so I hope that he takes his unique perspective on the issues that come before him. It remains to be seen. I don't know what he will do, but I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far. He did come and meet with the Senate Democratic Caucus on swearing-in day last week, which was a nice signal, and I've heard he's already said, you know, I'm open to alternative approaches to voter ID. It doesn't have to be this one rigid model that was originated in Indiana. There are other ways to skin the cat. And so if he has that sort of pragmatic, practical approach that mayors typically have, then I think he has the potential to be a really strong governor, and that's certainly what I hope he does.
Well, Senator Stein, thank you for what you're doing in Raleigh, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Up next, another push to dramatically increase interest rates on small consumer loans. Stay with us.